At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to this electrifying and both somber edition of the GGR podcast. We have a very exciting win to break down with your Golden Gopher squad somehow, some way pulling it out at the very end over a very good Fresno State team. But Luke, before we kind of get into things here, why don't you talk about our sponsor?
Yeah, so as always, this season will be sponsored by the Goal Line Club. If you're not familiar with the Goal Line Club, go to their website, check it out. But this is a way that you can support Gopher football directly. And you can do that by going to thegoalineclub.org to join and be a part of it. Not only are you able to participate, you know, financially with your membership costs, but additionally, you get to participate with other Gopher fans and just be a part of a group that's committed and loves Gopher football. And if you're listening to this podcast, I have a hard time believing you don't love Gopher football. So check it out at goalineclub.org.
So unfortunately, I think the first item we have to talk about is what was broken this afternoon when news reports finally surfaced that, yes, indeed, Minnesota stud running back, the most prolific and dynamic player on the Gopher offense last season and this season, Rodney Smith, is out for the year with an ACL tear.
Which, let's put this in perspective. That's two running backs in less than a calendar year out with ACLs.
It's unfortunate, man. I think there's the Venn diagram that people put on Twitter. It's nice things in one on one side, and it's Gopher football on the other side. And the middle part is just this little sliver. And days like today remind you that things, if they can and will, go wrong for this Gopher football team at times. It seems like they always do. So Rodney Smith in the third play of the game tried to plant on that left leg. And you could see it on the replay. I did not put it in a GIF rewind just because, again, nobody need to see that. But you could immediately tell he planted. He saw the grimace on his face and he went down. And anytime it's a non-contact and when he gets up, can't put any weight on it, it's never a good thing. So again, if you've tweeted me, so have 500 others asking for the update. This was essentially known over the weekend, but Fleck wanted to address it on Tuesday because that's kind of the way things work with PJs. He wants to address it then, but news broke this afternoon. So Fleck had to change his plans. So Minnesota's star running back, the best player on their offense, is now out for the year. Shannon Brooks is not going to likely be back until November at the earliest. So here we are looking at a six-week stretch here of some true freshman running back football to go with a true freshman starting quarterback and a leading receiver from last week that was a, you guessed it, true freshman.
Yeah, well, when we previewed the season, we said the one thing that really couldn't happen for this team to be successful, maybe even making a bowl game, was Rodney Smith going down, right? Because we already lost the insurance policy that was Shannon Brooks. And here we sit, and you know, our worst imagination has become our reality, right? That said, you won a tough game against a tough opponent. I think time will tell how good Fresno State really is. I think they're a solid squad.
I think they beat UCLA this weekend at UCLA. That's my hot take.
Yeah, I think they're good, right? And the Gophers found a way to win at home, down in the fourth quarter, and found a way to get the victory. I don't know how much we can probably stress this enough. When Rodney Smith goes down, he is such the focal point of your offense that your entire game plan is out the window, right? And maybe they tried to stick to it. I don't know, but it was totally out the window. So kudos to the squad. I mean, to steal a line from Coach Fleck, they put their oars in the water and they just kept rowing the boat, right? It really can't.
That feel coming out of your mouth.
It's pretty tough. It's not my favorite, but you got to give him credit. They found a way to win, and that's not necessarily the thing that we're used to and expect when that kind of adversity comes. You know, that's a testament to this team and the character of this team.
It is, and we'll get into it here in a little bit about with the offensive breakdown. But I agree with Luke that Minnesota game planned for one thing, and that was going to be Rodney Smith in space. Rodney Smith doing what he does and making an offensive line that's still trying to come together look better than it actually is. And then on the third play of the game, Minnesota runs a screen. Rodney gets the first down, but Rodney D essentially is done. So trying to have your RB3 true freshman, Bryce Williams, who played sparingly in the first game in garbage time.
Right.
You have your RB2, Mohammed Ibrahim, already out. For those wondering, when is he going to be back? I wouldn't expect he's back for Miami this upcoming weekend. I would imagine the timeline for him would be Maryland. There's no need to kind of rush that ankle. Watching him go through warmups, he wasn't even close to playing, and I really hope he doesn't play this weekend. Just because, again, there's no point, especially knowing that your RB1 and your RB1A and 1B, or whatever you want to call Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith, are now out for the season. And your who you thought was going to be your backup running back's already hurt. There's mm-hmm. no sense in rushing him back. So Minnesota can see what they have in Bryce Williams, who I think is the long-term solution to Minnesota's worries or Minnesota's solutions after Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith graduate. But we'll find out, because, again, I think as the game went on that Bryce Williams got better. But for those who are going to ask, well, can Rodney Smith come back for a sixth year? Yes. And I know AZJ is somewhere cringing and saying, no, they can't. Well, the people I've talked to on close to the Gopher staff firmly believe they could get the sixth year. So it's going to be all about what does Rodney Smith want to do? Does he want to come back for his sixth year? I think early indications are that he does, but you telling all your folks that, you know, you heard Ryan Burns say Rodney Smith's coming back. There's also 11 months for Rodney to change his mind.
Right.
And we'll see how everything goes with his, you know, his ACL repair. Cause again, ACL tears aren't what they used to be. But I also remember that Rodney had an ACL tear in high school where it took out his entire junior year. Now I don't remember what knee that is. I went back and tried to read my old recruiting articles from so long ago, seeing if he talked about it. I don't think he did.
Are you a good writer back then, or were you bad?
Oh, like 18? No. So Rodney's been here 5 years. So I was 20.
Okay. So you maybe weren't a terrible writer.
But. Yeah, he's been here 5 years, which means I talked to him 6 years ago. Yeah, so I was 20. Yeah, because I couldn't even. I was a sophomore at the University of Minnesota at that time. So, again, I'm expecting Rodney to come back at this point. But, folks, I mean, the guy just tore his ACL 2 days ago. He's got a lot of hurdles to clear before he makes a final determination on that. But I can assure you how sweet it would be to have a 22-year-old Shannon Brooks and a 22-year-old or 23-year-old Rodney Smith coming back to an offense that would return every single one of its skill position players another year, a quarterback going into his second year, an offensive line that'll have Curtis Dunlap and Daniel Faalele on it next year. It could be special. But, for the near future, I think you're going to see a ton of Bryce Williams this week. He got 25 carries after Rodney Smith went down. Now, I know Jonathan Femi-Cole played some, but I think I talked about it going into the year, Luke. If Jonathan Femi-Cole is playing meaningful snaps for Minnesota, things probably aren't going right on offense. So
yeah.
I think you're going to see a ton of Bryce Williams against Miami, and then come Maryland, we'll see what Mohammed Ibrahim's health is. But I expect it to be the Bryce and the Mohammed Ibrahim show going forward when Bone gets healthy. And then come November, I think you're going to see Shannon Brooks be mixed into it.
Well, let's wrap a bow on Rodney Smith, at least for this season, which is a terrible thing to say.
Disgusting.
Yeah, but let's just go through a little bit of the logic of maybe why he might come back. Let's actually rewind to last year, end of the season. We speculated that he may go pro. He evaluated, you know, his options and where he might grade out. I believe he was a late round draft pick in a very stacked running back class, if I remember correctly. And if I remember correctly, this year wasn't supposed to be as stacked, so this looked like a good opportunity for him. He already graduated. Here's the problem. If you grade out as a late round pick, even if the class wasn't going to be great this year, now you're injured. You know, it doesn't bode well for you for an NFL career. So he's probably got to put more tape on just to prove that, one, he's healthy, and then, two, that he's worthy of a tender. Now, he's a 23-year-old running back, which is probably a tough sell. The shelf life of running back in the NFL is pretty short. So, boy, it seems like a tough proposition. But if he wants to play football one more year, college might be his best bet.
Well, especially if he wants to break every single one of Daryl Thompson's
that's
records,
a good point.
He had a shot to too. If he would have stayed healthy this year, especially him being would have been the focal point, would have probably seen somewhere near 30 touches a game, which is insane to think about. But again, I think he comes back. I mean, I'm for all the reasons that Luke mentioned, the short life of an NFL running back. Now, essentially, you don't really get a second contract. I mean, you see what's going on. I'm sure some of our listeners drafted Le'Veon Bell, and he's trying to get a long-term deal. And it's just the shelf life and trying to get NFL teams on that second contract to kind of put any sort of guaranteed money behind it is a big issue. So, I mean, he knows he could come back and he'd have a spot, him and Shannon. I mean, I would love to see them both get like 17 touches a game next year. That's 22, 23-year-olds, like I said, behind an offensive skill position that would be another year older. Everybody would return. You would get in Jornell Manns. You would get in Nnamdi Adeyemi, Matthew Mayer, different things like that. So,
yeah.
Again, that's what if I was in Rodney's shoes, I mean, that's what I would do. But again, he is. He's graduated already. He's got his degree. So it's going to be about, again, how does the recovery go? Different things like that. So again, it sucks to say it. It sucks to say that we're in mid-September or not even mid-September yet. And Rodney Smith, I mean, worst case scenario, like we talked about coming into the season, is now out for the year. So this Minnesota team that's 2-0 and looking to go 3-0 this weekend is going to have some answers at the running back position come Big Ten play.
All right, let's actually get into the breakdown of the offense. Let's start there as we transition from Rodney Smith's injury. We talked about it a little bit already. He gets injured. It looked like they maybe tried to kind of go with the game plan. It obviously was not successful. Next thing you know, we're seeing a Seth Green Wildcat prominently featured probably just inside the 50, right? And they ride that thing in for their first score. I guess to me, the second they went Seth Green Wildcat is when they basically pitched the game plan and went and just said, okay, let's not be taking on a lot of risk. We're going to be risk averse here in this situation. Our defense is playing okay, and we're just going to try and make sure we don't make mistakes that are going to hurt us.
Yeah, you look at what Minnesota's game plan was looking to be was. When you watch the tape back, of which I had a chance to do yesterday, you saw that Minnesota really wanted to get involved in the screen game. You saw the tunnel screens that Minnesota was running to their wide receivers, where Anixter would pitch it out to either Rashad Bateman, Tyler Johnson. Then you would have the interior of your offensive line scream that way, try to get defensive backs off their feet. And that was actually a pretty successful play for Minnesota. They had a couple 15-plus yard games. But it's just the game plan that Kirk Ciarrocca, I think, installed, and then he tried to run it for like after the first quarter for like one drive in the second, and it was clear that it just wasn't going to work. And then so Minnesota, again, I don't have to tell any of you listeners that how brutal the offense looked in the second and third quarter. I mean, you look at the second quarter, punt, punt, field goal, punt, third quarter, three punts and a fumble. I mean, Minnesota literally couldn't find any kind of continuity. Now, again, that's mm-hmm. some of it is because Fresno State does have a good defense. Fresno State is a team that I think is going to challenge for the Mountain West title with Boise State. But again, this offense couldn't run the ball. And some of it, I mean, I guess some of it's on Bryce Williams. I mean, but again, how much do you want to actually put on the true freshman running back in essentially his first game? I mean, he got some BS carries at the end of the New Mexico State game, but
yeah,
I mean, he wasn't expecting to come in to this game and get 25 plus touches plus a couple touches in the passing game. Like, it is what it is. And so, again, that's where I'm under the theory, or the theory I'm going to go with, was that the game plan didn't work. PJ talked about it. They literally had to install some things on the sidelines because they knew it wasn't working. Their game plan literally had to be thrown out, so they had to install some things. And again, Luke, when you mentioned, when you saw Seth Green coming out randomly to try and get some, you know, wildcat quarterback going, again, you knew that the game plan was just effed. You know, it was just screwed up. Kirk Schrock is like, I'm just doing what I can to make sure we don't blow this for our defense that was playing exceptionally well.
Right.
So I think when you have this Miami of Ohio team coming in this weekend, again, a Miami of Ohio team that is 0-2, they lost home games so far to Cincinnati and Marshall. Minnesota, I believe, is favored by 14 points right now, and that's with the Rodney Smith news. So Kirk Schrocka having a full week to game plan for what he thinks the personnel is going to be. And again, if you're Kirk Schrocka right now, you're earning your check, because like I mentioned, you have a true freshman starting quarterback. Your RB1 now is a true freshman. You look at your receiving core of Bateman, Altman Bell, Johnson, and Demetrius Douglas. You have three freshmen and a junior, and Seth Green's a sophomore. I mean, it's just, how much do you want to throw at these guys compared to what you can actually get down on the field? And so, again, when you look at like Zach Anakstead, though, again, we're still struggling to complete the downfield pass. Zach Anakstead's still taking some shots.
Yep.
But again, at least there's the shots down the field. Now, do I agree with everyone else that Zach Anakstead needs to start to complete some of these? Again, yes. I mean, I've talked to some Gopher staff members about it, and they're kind of as mystified as I was, because again, the calling card for Zach all camp was, man, his deep ball's good and it's accurate. And now we're through two games and he's just been overthrowing some guys. So, I mean, decision-making wise, I mean, there are a few plays I wish Zach could have back, especially that near interception on the sidelines, which was reviewed and somehow ruled a non-interception, which, Luke, I've watched that play back and I was like, I have no idea, because he got Jeffrey Allison as the linebacker for Fresno State, who was sensational all night. He got the foot down.
I think that the challenge was that it was really close, and the fact that it was called incomplete on the field, it just wasn't super indisputable. I think that would be my guess. I don't disagree with you though that I think that
I thought refereeing crew had I'm going to put it in a nice term, has seen better nights. Because, yeah, boy, oh boy, did they screw up the flow of the game. I don't think they got the calls right. But again, I guess that's non-conference for them. So you hope once Big Ten refereeing season comes, and
yeah,
Lordy, do you listeners know how much we're probably going to go off on them during the podcast during the Big Ten season. But I don't know. What did you think of Zach Anakstead?
I mean, again, from my perspective, he managed the game okay. I think when you can look in the turnover column and you have a zero from him, that's a positive, right? I mean, he's at least managed the game well from that perspective. He made an electrifying play to continue a drive on that kind of Fran Tarkington-esque scramble around, or at least the legend that I've heard of Fran Tarkington, you know, to hit Tyler Johnson, which, by the way, an incredible catch by him, tapping the sideline. But
a Gopher quarterback doesn't make that play in the last 5 years.
Sure.
No way.
Right. It's a great play, and he keeps the drive alive, right? And that's what you kind of need. But in the same respect, there is some consistency stuff that you'd like to see him shore up and improve. You know, when he feels pressure, you know, he tends to backpedal instead of step up. I know that the offensive line has some opportunity to improve there as well, right? By the way, didn't we have questions about Fresno State's defensive line? They looked okay to me. But yeah, I mean, I think there's consistency stuff that'll come with just the natural maturation process and of getting more experience. I still like the ball out of his hand. I still think he throws it well. I still am critical of some technique stuff when it comes to footwork. specifically on the back pedaling. But otherwise, I mean, darn, he throws a really nice ball if we're being really honest. And he's also seeing a lot of success over the middle, right? And that's what we saw last year with Connor Rota as well.
It is. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. So, I mean, let's go back to that miraculous momentum-changing play. I mean, Tyler Johnson, not the greatest night for him. We'll get to that. But fumbles the ball. Fresno State converts on an easy point. And then it looks like, again, things are shifting. You know, Fresno State gets another touchdown. They take the lead. Minnesota's offense hasn't done anything for two quarters. It's 3rd and 9. And Sam Schluter gets put in the wash. And, again, we'll talk about offensive line. And I think Schluter has seen better days, especially in pass protection. But, again, he Brett Favre's it or Fran Tarkenton's it, whatever however you want to call it, goes back 20 yards to come back 20 yards. Rolling to his left, throws the ball 30 yards in the air with accuracy to a toe-tapping Tyler Johnson for a first down. I know from, again, the press box, again, there's no cheering, but it was everybody like, holy cow, that kid actually made the play. And then everybody looks at each other and goes, ain't no way the quarterbacks of years past make that play. So, again, you're going to get some highs, you're going to get some lows of the true freshman quarterback, but you can see why Minnesota was so high on him. Why I've said I think Zach Anikstead is the most arm talent of a Gopher quarterback I've seen. I mean, I guess in theory it's not saying much compared to Mitch Leidner, Connor Rota, and Demry Croft. But, again, I don't think a Gopher quarterback makes that play. So, and then when you also have the pressure aspect, so I don't think that the sideline view really does it justice in terms of I've talked about this with PA on KFAM religiously. I wish we could watch a game and they would allow us to watch a game in all 22. Or you have that whatever the field cam is that's like behind the quarterback there.
Yeah.
So folks can get a true impression of how tough it is to judge from the sideline view about what the quarterback actually sees. Because number one, I think you would see that it's much more difficult than you think. And then number two, I mean, there are some plays where I thought that Zach Anikstead should have stepped up. But in that same respect, if you expect him to step up in that kind of in some of these plays,
yep.
You also don't see that, you know, the interior of the offensive line was getting beat. Mm-hmm. Now, I talked about it. Sam Schluter had a very rough night in pass protection, and he was the culprit too many times. And again, it's a small sample size. It's two games into the guy's sophomore year, but Minnesota's going to need a lot more consistent pass protection from that right side and Sam Schluter. Especially with Daniel Fa'alele waiting in the wings there. Now, I know that Minnesota wants to redshirt Daniel as best they can, and they really want to. But again, Schluter needs to improve because that pass protection was a big issue. And that was half the reason you saw that Zach Anikstead continues to just backpedal is he gets the top of his drop. And again, the right tackle is the one right in his face. Well, if he's seeing his right tackle being put on skates, or the guy getting close, well, he's not going to step up. Again, he can feel the pressure on the backside if he wants to step up. But if it's in his face, he's just going to roll, and he's going to backpedal. So, again, I'm not making excuses, but I am making excuses because it's a guy in a second career game. And I know that during the game, I had people like, oh, my gosh, he's turning into Case Keenum. I hope he turns into Case Keenum. Are you kidding me?
Case
like
Keenum was a
quarterback who's starting.
He's a fantastic college player too, by the way.
The thing that I think folks need to remember, Zach Anikstead is a true freshman and he's 18 years old.
Yeah.
Stop comparing him to, again, even Adam Weber. Because, again, Adam Weber started like 40 games. Zach started 2.
Yep.
Or any random NFL quarterback that you may have seen because it's not fair to him. Again, if he was a junior or senior and started 20-plus games, we could have some much more in-depth discussions about, yes, I mean, the pocket, he needs to figure it out a little bit more. But let's let the kid get his feet wet before we start to make all these determinations.
Yeah, and I agree with you. He's got time. And the thing is we've talked about many times, having success throwing the ball, it's not one face. It's not all on the quarterback. It's not all on the receiver. It's also on the offensive line. It's also on running backs being able to pick up blitzes, right? It's a team effort in passing and just football in general, right? And I think that this is a situation for Zach, you know, when he gets a clean pocket and he's able to stand and step and throw, you see a lot more consistency. When he's not, you don't. And that's gonna come. And some of it's on his receivers too. Now to it, you know, I don't think that previous quarterbacks had nearly the receivers that he has probably right now. Maybe Mitch Leidner and Max Williams' sophomore year, maybe then. But I mean, this is, he's getting separation. Guys are getting open for the most part, and it's a lot better. I mean, the passing game, if you don't think that there's been a dramatic improvement, I guess maybe you're wanting to wait until Maryland and a Big Ten game. Fair enough. But I mean, to me, like just watching Rashad Bateman come across the middle, like there is a significant talent upgrade at the receiver position.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think that's a fair take for you to say, because again, do his receivers make him look a little bit better than he does? Probably. But in that same breath, you mention it. I mean, when Zach Anixter does have time and he's able to deliver the throw, I mean, boy, he can make some throws that, like the short to intermediate game, that it's like, wow, this is what it's like to have an adequate quarterback throwing the ball.
Like I'm thinking about the deeper kind of slant, Chris Ottman Bell, you know, he fit that into a really tough window. Give Ottman Bell credit too. He got pummeled by two guys, right, and held on, which that guy's credit, man, does he have sticky hands and hold on to the ball. But that is a heck of a throw. Like that was probably one of his better throws of the night. I'd almost put that on par or above the one to Tyler Johnson, right? Like that's a tight window. It closes quickly. You got to anticipate it, right? And a great throw.
It was. And I mean, let's talk a little bit about these receivers. I mean, second straight game, Tyler Johnson drops his opening target. And on this one alone, I think that would have went for six. I mean, Fresno State was in man coverage, and it would have been one guy to beat, and Tyler could have been off to the races, but glances off his hands. And again, that's been kind of the struggle for this staff, is to make sure that Tyler's focused. Again, he has all the talent in the world. You saw it last week or 2 weeks ago against New Mexico State. When his head's on straight and he catches the ball, I mean, you're there. Again, it's just about him maintaining that focus on every single play, because then he can go and do things like on the Anixter to Johnson momentum changing play, where he comes down with that somehow.
Yeah.
Or on the tunnel screen where he makes a couple guys miss and gets 16 yards. So again, Tyler Johnson is just about consistency. I don't think there's any question of the talent. It's just about consistency with him. With Rashad Bateman, I mean, he's going to be special.
He's going to be special. Like when have you seen wheels like that on a receiver, right? Like
I think this is underselling Rashad Bateman, but I think Rashad Bateman's impact is what folks thought Isaiah Gentry was going to be.
Sure.
And I think Rashad Bateman is going to be much better, better than what we saw. Obviously, Isaiah Gentry has already put that on tape through two games of his freshman year. So, again, I think Rashad Bateman, it's just going to be about him continuing to play football, because he's making some catches in tight windows. And Chris Ottman Bell, you mentioned him, Luke. Dude has six catches. I think on all six catches have been across the middle between the numbers and him getting pummeled.
Like
he's your Philip Howard from last year, where it seemingly every time that Ottman Bell, or excuse me, Philip Howard was targeted, he got nailed. Well, again, this year it's Chris Ottman Bell, and he's making some plays, and that's why you can see PJ Fleck calls him crab hands, because he says it just – he's got the tightest grip on the ball he's seen, and Zach's been able to fit it into some tight windows and some key situations on second and third down. So, and the craziest part is, Luke, we haven't even seen Seth Green catch a pass yet,
right?
Or even be targeted, and he's got four touchdowns.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so again, Seth Green, the Wildcat package. Again, I've been calling for that freaking pop pass, and they finally threw it.
Yeah.
And again, I guess it wasn't a pop pass. It was essentially just play action where Co-Keith went 1-1002, released from his run block, turned his head around. Back in the Tartan High School days, we would call that pro right eye 88 wide dump. That would be the play call if we were at the Tartan High School. Again, Seth Green, I think you're going to continue to see that here, especially next week. I know that some people are already starting to hate it, but Seth Green hasn't been hitting for a negative yardage yet. So, again, you saw Minnesota, which, by the way, I was all for going for it on that fourth down near midfield.
Yeah.
Fresno State had all the momentum.
Yep.
Seth Green had not been stopped, and Minnesota ran behind its right side of its offensive line along with Cokeith and Colton Beebe, and Colton Beebe nearly decapitated a poor young man coming down in a crack there, and Seth finds it, gets going. So again, maybe one day we'll be able to see Seth Green, the receiver that looks so good in fall camp, but for now, I think you're going to see Seth Green, the red zone bully, and I think that the Gopher, I think media relations staff is trying to get the phrase the green line, as in like the
the light rail. That's hilarious.
Which boo. it just seems like you're trying way too hard. So again, offensively, you get 21 points on the board.
Yeah.
It doesn't look great. It looks good to start. It looks good to end. And in between, it was a lot of mess.
Yeah.
So again, my expectations coming into this weekend would be Kirk Cherok is able to put in a much different game plan for the personnel that he has, which is going to be freshmen all over the place. And then I guess offensive line wise, to kind of round things out, Luke, I mean, I touched on Sam Schluter, but you can see with Blaze Andrews, it's going to be up and down this year, but boy, oh boy, when you get him in space, I mean, him on those tunnel screens, he's so athletic and right. He's able to do some different things that, again, which is why I know that there are some on the Gopher offensive coaching staff that are extremely high on Blaze long term. Downhill Green, I think, continues to play well from that left tackle spot. And again, what were your thoughts on the offensive line before we switched to Minnesota's dominant defensive performance?
Well, I was actually impressed. Like, I know that they went away from the tunnel screens, but Andrew stood out to me on those tunnel screens. I was kind of in awe. Like, we've never seen the Gophers run, at least in recent memory, I can't think of the Gophers run a tunnel screen with much success. Not that it was so fantastic, but it kind of looked the part. I mean, you touched on Schluter. He had a tough night. That happens. But I don't know. Danielle Green's been solid. Jared Weiler, I think, has still been fairly solid. It was nice to see. I don't think they had a substitution, did they, all game? So it's always nice to see, you know, five go all four quarters. I'd like to see them build some continuity, continue to. There wasn't a lot of push at times. Obviously, we want to see a little bit more push to give a guy like Bryce Williams a little bit more opportunity. I think that Rodney Smith makes you look better maybe than you are at times. So I think we're going to really get a true gauge of what they're like, you know, the next couple of weeks. They really got to come together and gel.
All right, so before we talk about the defense, I think we should touch on the goal line club here once again, Luke.
Yeah. So for those that are aware, we've been kind of pushing for the Goal Line Club, the tailgates that they have. And they're fantastic. If you go to their website right now, thegoallineclub.org, you can sign up for the game against the game on Saturday against
Miami of Ohio.
Yes, yep. I totally forgot who we're playing. You can sign up now for that. That'll close on Wednesday. That tailgate for members is $35. For non-members, it's $45. Remember, that is fully catered food and beverage, all you can eat, all you can drink. It's family friendly, the whole nine yards. That's outside of Williams Arena. One thing that we haven't touched on yet, which is also you can sign up today for, Ryan, is that tunnel team experience. That's $10. And you can sign up for that on the Goal Line Club's website. I mean, that's an opportunity, especially for people with younger kids, maybe, or even if you're just an avid fan, getting a chance to be a part of the tunnel team. That's a great opportunity at really a reasonable cost.
It is. And again, it's such a cool experience for, you know, for me, as if, you know, potentially being a Gopher fan again, being able to get down into the tunnel, seeing the team walk out, seeing PJ Fleck leading him out. I'm sure. And I know the people that have gone and done the tunnel team, and I can assure you, especially if you have kids, it is something that they will never forget. Being able to, you know, put their hand out for Zach Anikstad or Tyler Johnson to come by and hit it. Again, they are, if something, especially for me, you know, if I were to have kids, and this would be an experience where it's only $10. Again, 10 bucks to go into the tunnel, see PJ Fleck lead the team out, see all the players, get your kid wide-eyed, googly, wanting to, you know, maybe, you know, if they don't love Gopher football as much as you do just yet, I think this could be a great, great way to jumpstart. So again, the tailgates, I will be there this Saturday. This will be the first one I'll be able to go to because of pregame media responsibility. So If you want to go to that, as Luke said, $45 for members, $35 for, or $35, yeah, $35 for members, $45 for non-members. Sign up by Wednesday around noon, I believe, at goallineclub.org. I'll be there. I'm going to be able to talk to each and every one of you if you guys want to come up. And then with the Tunnel Team, it's only $10. So if you want to learn more about Tunnel Team or the tailgates, go to goallineclub.org.
In addition to that, I just want to highlight that they also already have the Iowa tailgate online. They expect that to be very, very popular. So if you're gonna want to be a part of it, make sure you sign up like today. It's gonna be a big raucous deal. So sign up at goallineclub.org. All right, let's talk.
Speaking of raucous deals, I think we should talk about that Gopher defense.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Until they were put in a short field,
yeah.
They were absolutely they were dynamic against the Fresno State team that scored 79 points last week.
Right.
And now, number one, Idaho's not great.
Right, but 79 points is unbelievable.
He still scored 79 points. So,
right.
If you look at just this defense – you and I had our question marks. I still have my question marks. I still don't know if this team can stop the run at all because Fresno State really didn't try to run it at all. They tried to do some different things. But again, they only ran the ball with their running backs about 20 times, and they only got, I think, 70 yards. So again, less than 4 yards a carry, no rushing touchdowns. But you look at what Fresno State was able to do on their drives to start the game. It wasn't great. No. You look at through three quarters or until Minnesota's defense was put on a short field, punt, interception, punt, punt, kneel down, punt, 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 punt. So for the first nine drives of the game, they didn't go nowhere. Well, and then go ahead.
I was going to say, and to that point, I know we'll touch on this later, but arguably their best offense in the early part of the game was their punting, right? Because they were able to flip the field.
We will have a punting discussion.
Yes.
I am a little bit perturbed
yeah.
by the punting situation, especially compared to the dynamic punting of Blake Cusick, the Fresno State punter. But yes, arguably that was their best offensive play was being able to flip the field because you note it. Minnesota started on average at their own 20-yard line because of this punter, while Fresno State started at their own 32. So, again, it's all about field position and switching the field. But, again, we'll get to that. So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you're right. The defense was opportunistic turning the ball over. Think about that Terrell Smith interception, running in front, right? That was super impressive. And they were opportunistic. And the thing is, they lost guys and guys stepped up and made plays. It was over and over. They were just consistent until they were put into that bad short yardage situation.
They were. And again, defensively, you were able to see a little bit more. Let's start on the defensive line, Luke. I think you were able to see more OJ Smith, which I was happy about. And again, there's still some folks who don't quite understand what O.J. Smith's role is. O.J. Smith is never going to get more than 1.5 sacks in a season. Now, if he proves me wrong, great, but I wouldn't count on it because O.J. Smith's responsibility is to eat double teams on running and passing downs. He is there to be a 330-pound clogging A-gap type of player that holds the gap and allows Blake Cashman to shoot through, Kamal Martin to shoot through, Thomas Barber to shoot through. That is essentially his role, is just be big and stand there. He's the Pat Williams of the Gopher defense. For those of you who remember the Williams wall of the Minnesota Viking defense from 5-10 years ago now. That's his role, and I think he's played it well. The issue is, and we can talk about this from the defensive line, Luke, another game where Minnesota doesn't have a sack on the game, I think some of that's on the defense, and I think some of that is actually schematically what Fresno State was trying to do. If you go back and watch the game, watch how much Fresno State moves Marcus McMarion in the pocket, putting him at different points in the backfield. Sometimes he gets close to the line of scrimmage. Sometimes he gets back. Sometimes he's on the left side. He rolls left, then he rolls right. There's not a firm target point for you to go to. Plus, Marcus McMarion could also use his feet to get extra yardage. So, again, some of that is on the Gopher defense. But, again, you look at Marcus McMarion as well. Last season, and I think 500-plus dropbacks, Marcus McMarion was only sacked 8 times, and he had a 2% sack rate. So, again, it is what it is. I just don't – because I think quarterback sacks in terms of, some of it's on the quarterback. And Marcus McMarion is just – he's agile. And, again, Minnesota still does need to generate a better pass rush. I don't put any of that on Carter Coughlin's plate because second straight game where Carter Coughlin leads the team in pressures. Carter Coughlin has another 1.5 tackles for loss. And I think Carter Coughlin is improving. The issue is Carter Coughlin needs help. Like when Minnesota puts in Teyon Devers, Winston Delady-Boudaire. I mean, there were some plays, Luke, before I kick it back to you here, that you look at the personnel Minnesota had on the field in like a second and third, in a passing situation, and you're rolling out Sam Renner, Teyon Devers, Winston Delady-Boudaire, and OJ Smith. I mean, who exactly from that group are you expecting to rush the passer there? So to me, some of that's on what is your personnel? Because it's a lot different when you have Gary Moore, which is your best interior pass rusher, Carter Coughlin out there, and then maybe you're standing up Kamal Martin or Blake Cashman on the outside.
So one guy that I wanted to highlight from the game, and I just mostly want to get your thoughts. I thought Ezio Otuomo had at least a somewhat decent game in the limited reps that he had. He never was able to get home, but he seemingly had some good pressure. Were my eyes deceiving me, or was that what you were seeing as well?
I'm with you as well, and it's kind of – I want to see more Ezio Otuomo, and I don't understand yet why I'm not seeing it. I understand that Winston Delady-Boudaire is kind of the emotional leader of this defense, but Ezio Otuomo gives this defense, I think, more upside because he's bigger, he's longer, I think he's more explosive, plus he's 3 years younger. So, yeah. When you look at Miami of Ohio coming up, Minnesota does rotate their defensive line quite a bit, but I hope that the snaps – compared for Big O versus Winston Delady-Boudaire, start to kind of shift more to Big O.
Mm-hmm.
But in that same breath, you talked about the Terrell Smith interception. I have zero inclination of why Marcus McMarion didn't just run to the first down there.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
It was a strange decision by a senior quarterback who's played football for quite a bit of time here. But Terrell Smith, I think he has surpassed any expectation. Again, extremely small sample size. We're only a sixth of a way here through the 2018 season, but through two games, I mean, the kid may not have perfect technique, which you shouldn't expect from a true freshman, but what he does have is he has the size at 6'1". He has the length, and he has that 10'3", 100-meter track speed that mm-hmm. he's able to get away with some things because of that. I mean, he does get beat on that crossing route, which Marcus McMarion tries to fit it into. But then Terrell Smith is he's the fastest player on the team. So he accelerates up, jumps in front of it, and he's able to get a pick. And then he also gets beat in the second half on a deep ball. He flips his hips, sees the ball is coming, accelerates up, meets the ball at the mesh point, knocks it away. Again, the kid's a true freshman and he's playing exceptionally well. I mean, what did you think about Terrell Smith in game two?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was good. I don't want to take any thunder away from him, but I think we have to commend a large portion of the secondary, really. I thought Jacob Huff arguably had one of his best tackling games I've seen.
And Minnesota needed it, man, because there were going to be a few of those tackles where Jacob Huff comes up and makes an 8-yard tackle. Again, your Gopher fan sitting in your seat, oh, man, they got 8 yards. Well, if Huff doesn't make that tackle, which he always hasn't been reliable to do, I mean, you're looking at a 58-yard touchdown instead of an 8-yard gain. So that's a great take, Luke. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Elite Football Mind, Luke.
Oh, I know. I haven't looked at the Pro Football Focus numbers yet, but I got to imagine he had to be up there. Another guy that I thought stepped in and played really well, if you think about it, was Coney Durr. He came in for...
How about that, man?
I thought he was good. I mean, I know he got beat for the touchdown, but still, I mean, I thought he played incredibly well. And you think, he went up against Keyshawn Johnson, who is
is an All Mountain West wide receiver, someone that is in his fourth year of being the guy for a Fresno State team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Coney Durr, I mean, that's the best Coney Durr has looked in 21 months since he was in the 2016 bowl game before he tore his knee.
Yep.
Last season, he's not confident in his knee. It's still bothering him. During spring ball of 2018, it's still bothering him. During fall camp, it was even still bothering him. But then the light came on when he knew he had to play because Minnesota starting corner Keandre Thomas essentially was out for this from the second quarter on with a soft tissue injury. He was on the bike. I believe he's day to day, and we'll see if he plays against Miami of Ohio. But I wasn't expecting anything from Cody Dura this year. He hadn't been healthy, and you were able to see him be healthy,
right,
and be confident, because I think that's been the biggest thing for Cody Dura. Is physically, I think he's as close to 100% as he's going to get, but it's mentally him believing in his knee again,
mm-hmm,
him believing he can be as explosive as he once knew he was. And for him to have a game like he did, and he had 5 total tackles, a tackle for loss. On the tackle for loss, I mean, he makes a fantastic play in space, gets the tackle for loss on an end around, he stays home. And again, he made some big plays when Minnesota needed it with Keandre Thomas out. So, again, I think we have to give some kudos here to Jameel Adai.
Yeah.
I mean, Terrell Smith is a true freshman, looks pretty dang good. Antoine Winfield, I don't think defensively he had a great game at all. He got beat on the first touchdown.
Yeah.
He tried to recover. He wasn't good. I don't think Antoine Winfield had a great game, and then the Big Ten goes out and names him Defensive Player of the Week.
Well, he made the play of the week, basically.
And we'll get to the play of the lifetime for some people, which I still have no idea how he got to that. But, this is a secondary that through 2 games, again, New Mexico State, not great competition, but I think Minnesota did a pretty good job against, again, a Fresno State passing offense with guys like Keyshawn Johnson. That have been pretty prolific through the last 20 games or so. So, again, we'll see how things progress with the secondary. But, I mean, I think through 2 games, Jameel Adai is looking like a thumbs up higher. I mean, what did you think about, by the way, Blake Cashman?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to track Cashman and Coughlin going forward. They just kind of seem to be TFL machines, both with 1.5 TFLs again. They've been really impressive thus far. I don't know. I thought Thomas Barber was okay, had maybe a little tougher game this time around. I don't know how it shows up in like maybe the Pro Football Focus. I haven't had a chance to look at that, or even if that's out yet. But he seemingly, to me, from the eye test, looked to maybe struggle a little bit more than normal. Maybe it was the more spread nature of their attack. But
yeah, it wasn't a great game for Thomas. There were third down specifically. A guy came across the formation, Marcus McMarion scrambled for a first down. Him and Winfield got crossed there. Now, again, it looked like Winfield's guy was the one that Thomas was running with, and Thomas should have been running full speed at the Fresno quarterback. But I think, for the people who are like, Thomas Barber isn't playing well. I don't know that it's necessarily
that
so much as that, but I think Blake Cashman is kind of taking the role that you saw Thomas Barber excel with last year. And if that takes some of the hits off Thomas come Big Ten play, where I think he really excelled last year, that's good. Now, again, Blake Cashman missed a little bit of time during the game on Saturday. I believe he's going to be good to go for this weekend, so don't have to worry about that. But, again, I think Minnesota's linebackers continue to be the strength of this team. And as long as the defensive line can somewhat generate pressure. Now, I didn't see as many creative stunts and as many just creativity with rushing 5 or less to try and get some pressure on Marcus McMarion. But I imagine you're going to see that this upcoming weekend against Miami of Ohio, a team that's really struggled to run the ball and has had to pass more than 45 times a game here so far. So, again, I think you're going to see Rob Smith dial up some different things. But, again, Minnesota needs someone on their defensive line not named Carter Coughlin to step up, because the rest of the guys outside of, I think, Gary Moore are really struggling to try and generate a pass rush. And they're going to need to start to do some things. But, Luke, to end it defensively, the play of the decade defensively for your guy Antoine Winfield.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll recap what I already have recapped to you previously. One, they have the ball at the 4-yard line, right? They give it to a running back. It's a halfback pass, just like everybody ran in flag football growing up, right? The halfback's going to pass. Try and catch the safety or somebody flying up and throw it over their head for a nice short gain. In this situation, a touchdown, you're just asking that tight end to get to the back pylon, right? And just, stand there, get as far away as possible. Number one, I already said this to you. This is a fairly decently thrown ball by a running back off his back foot. Good pressure by, I think, was it Blake Cashman on that? Do you remember?
I could pull up the GIF. Okay. By the way, if you want to see any of these, my GIF rewind has been up all day in Gopher Illustrated, 30-plus plays from the game, and I made the fourth quarter free. So if you're not a Gopher Illustrated member, just head on over to my Twitter or just go to gopherillustrated.com, and you can click on the GI GIF rewind fourth quarter, and you can relive, which was one of the most exciting fourth quarters in the last decade for your Gopher football team.
Okay, so here we have a running back makes this throw, a pretty decently thrown ball. You can tell the second that Antoine Winfield realizes it's going to be a pass, he does the, oh, crap, and then hightails it back, right?
this is a family-friendly show, Luke, so yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, he hightails it back. He basically plays like a center fielder, knowing a line drive screaming over his head and just praying he's going to run to the right spot, correct? He gets back there, and then when he gets there, the receiver makes arguably the worst high point or tip drill or whatever you want to call it attempt to try and catch that ball, which kind of bails him out, in my opinion. Then he makes a phenomenal grab to stay in bounds, number one, but also hang onto the ball and land very hard and held onto it. I mean, phenomenal play. The end result was phenomenal. I wouldn't say that the whole thing was a phenomenal play.
A little bit of side note for you listeners, because I talked about it on GI as well, but this halfback pass isn't out of the blue. This is a play that Fresno State ran twice last year in both plays, or both times they had touchdowns. So, again, this is something that Fresno State had success with, and they went back to it in their time of need. And as Luke mentioned, Antoine Winfield sees the guy go past him, but he gets too greedy, keeps his eyes on the running back. In the moment, and you can watch this on the GIF rewind, the moment that that running back starts to put the ball up, he's like, oh, blank, retreats. The running back throws it. Antoine Winfield looks at the ball over his right shoulder. Okay, he knows where it is, and he knows he has to go left. He turns back over his left shoulder, turns his body in the air, plants himself between the receiver and the ball, comes down with it, and somehow has the wherewithal to get his right foot underneath him to get 1 foot down, come down with the ball. I've never seen a recovery like that, and that is why Antoine Winfield Jr. is such a special player. And again, I think, again, Luke, I think the pass was adequate. I think my take on the wide receiver is he was like 3 feet from going out the back of the end zone. So he didn't exactly want to kind of do anything more than he had to. And he didn't expect Antoine Winfield to be there because he knew he blew past him. So when he went up to get it, Winfield surprised him. Winfield snatches it. And then Winfield comes down with the game-saving interception, and Minnesota is able to walk away 2-0. Again, a defense that had two straight series where, one, they were put on a short field. Fresno State finally gets going. But then, again, when things come back, it's Antoine Winfield is a heck of a player, man. And I'm very glad to be covering him as a Minnesota beat writer, I'll tell you that much.
Let's give I think it was Darren Wolfson that tweeted something to the extent of, you know, maybe the best recruiting job by Fleck was actually keeping Winfield. And I can't argue with that take. That is pretty astute. Having him on that team, I don't know where they would be, especially defensively in the defensive backfield, but he is a special talent, and I'm glad we have him.
Before we get to special teams, and I'm going to go off on some things, what did you think of the Carter Coughlin roughing the passer?
I didn't think it was a great call. I thought it was a little late, but in the same respect, I think that that is a tough call to make consistently, because it is so subjective, right? So I don't envy the official having to make that play, but or make that call, but I didn't agree with it.
I hated it. Absolutely hated it for two reasons. Talked about it in the GIF rewind. That flag was thrown 7 seconds after the play happened.
Yeah.
And it was only because, in my mind, the referee saw that the quarterback didn't get up right away. Now, you go back and you watch that GIF, and you go back and you watch the GIF. Like, Carter Coughlin, I don't know what else you want him to do. It wasn't helmet to helmet. McMurray was already falling down. That's not roughing the passer. That's the defensive end finishing And he did again. The face mask is in Carter Coughlin's chest because he's already falling down. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, you know, roughing the passer wise about it. But if you're going to call that, and you are that referee who threw that, why did you throw it 7 seconds after the play? When, in my mind, it's because you saw I didn't get up. And that's putting your emotions in the game, which as a referee, you're supposed to be unbiased. So I think it's a load of deer scat, sticking to brand here.
Yeah.
And again, I can't, it goes from being such a swing of momentum where it's a botch snap. He ends up getting it away. And then it goes from a 15-yard loss to a 15-yard gain for Fresno State. So again, I'm not a huge proponent of that flag. I think it was a load of.
You didn't like it. Yeah.
No, I didn't. All right. Speaking of things I also didn't like.
Well,
let's talk about what we did like. Emmett Carpenter.
Yeah.
Two
50-yard field goals. I mean, that is no small feat, especially after game one where he missed a 48-yarder or 40-yarder real bad.
And I had people in my mentions. Why is Emmett Carpenter broke? Folks, it's college kickers, man. I mean,
yeah.
You're comparing to them to guys like Justin Tucker of the Baltimore Ravens. And again, even if you're a Vikings fan, you've seen how Minnesota kickers have struggled. And so for Emma Carpenter, in my mind, to have two of his five biggest kicks of the career, especially in time and place and distance considered, I mean, he's got some cojones on him being able to nail one for 53 and then from 50 to really give Minnesota points when they needed it. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, execution was phenomenal. Again, kicking, much like throwing the ball, is a team thing, right? You got to have a great snap, great hold. Line's got to be able to hold the defenders back, and then you got to be able to get a kick high enough and far enough, one, to get over the line, and two, to get over the upright. And I mean, from 50 yards, that's a pretty tough feat. Kudos to him. I think he's still the highest field goal percentage in Gopher history. So that's nothing to balk at. Really, really good there. I think you and I both, we had big question marks coming into the season, specifically about punting. And thus far, those question marks have not been answered. I'm not trying to rag on Jacob Herbers, but at this point, you know, he's got what, one kick inside the 20, which
he's got one more game to show something before I'm going to go full blown Alex Melvin, SMU grad transfer punter that Minnesota brought in this summer.
Right.
Needs to be getting some kicks.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like you need to be able to have some level of consistency. I don't know. It's tough because as we talked about so frequently early in the off season, is punting is so crucial.
For a Minnesota offense that, as we talked about to start the show, for at least the next month and a half is going to be true freshman running back, and you're going to have five underclassmen skill position players plus three underclassmen on the offensive line. Like, you're going to go through some struggles.
Right.
You need a punter that can be able to change the game.
Yeah, and sometimes that's how you can keep yourself in a game, right? So I think it's very possible that this year we have a game where we more or less get completely blown out, and it's in large part because we're not able to flip the field, and you just can't give your defenses short fields all game long, right?
I mean, you mentioned it, though. I mean, let's look at Fresno State's punter. Let's look at Minnesota's punter, Blake Cusick. For Fresno State, I was drooling in the press box. I mean, he is the equivalent that I've seen so far of the Seattle punter, Michael Dixon.
Sure.
You saw him in the preseason. I mean, the dude is unbelievable. Now, again, I think Blake Cusick is probably just a good college punter. 7 kicks for a 44 average. Okay. And you're like, well, okay, what does that mean? Well, when you put it in context, he has that 44 average. But 6 of his 7 punts that averaged 44 yards were inside the 20, and he had 2 over 50.
Which you
I
think
mean, if you punt the ball 7 times and 6 of them end up inside the 20, that's pretty bleeping good.
Right, and for context, now remember that on a kickoff, you just have to catch the ball and fair catch it right, inside the 20 and you get it at the 25, right? So already by being able to kick it inside the 20, you know, 6 out of 7 times, that is really, really good if you're thinking about even if you just had to kick off.
And then on the flip side of things, Jacob Herbers, 6 punts for 38.5 average, all right? In context, 1 inside the 20 and 1 of 50 yards, and I feel gross even saying the 1 in 50 yards because that thing went about 32 yards and then rolled for 20, getting him to 50.
Right. So there's kind of two approaches you can take right in college punting these days. Like number one is you do the traditional, like, let's get as much hang time as we can, give our defense a chance to, you know, set up and get down there so that they either have to fair catch and there's almost no return, right? Or there's the alternative of we're going to basically try to kick it away from a player. We can keep it low, but hopefully we'll get it on the ground, which makes it dangerous to try and pick up because if you haven't noticed, footballs are really weird shaped and they don't have a lot of consistency to what way they're going to bounce. So then people just basically all fire and get away, right? So right now we're not really doing either particularly well.
Essentially the punt goes up in the air and instead of him seeing the punt returner drift right or drift left or drift back, he's drifting forward. You never want him to drift forward. And again, it's Minnesota needs better punter play. And I don't know what the long-term solution is because I don't think Jacob Herbers is the guy. Alex Melvin is a grad transfer. And as of right now, Minnesota's not planning on bringing in a scholarship punter. So,
well, and they've got another scholarship kicker in Grant Rierse who, I mean, he punted.
I would be shocked if Grant Rierse gets any time.
Yeah.
I don't think Grant Rierse is going to see time here at the University of Minnesota, at least anytime soon. So, I mean, your options for this year look like it's going to be Herbers or it looks like it's going to be Alex Melvin. Herbers gets one more game, and then I'm going to be seriously calling for Alex Melvin because for all the reasons I mentioned, again, I have no qualm against Jacob Herbers or his family. Jacob Herbers is a fantastic human being.
Also a baseball player, right?
Yes, and you saw in the press conference afterwards, again, holding the mic.
That is a funny bit.
Because he's also the holder. But this is about Minnesota's offense. Again, it's so young, it's going to take lumps, and I feel bad for the Gopher defense because they're going to be put on short fields that they have no business doing if Minnesota just has an adequate punter. So, once again, Jacob Herbers gets one more game from me before I start calling for heads. But, again, we'll see how things plan out here. And, again, Emma Carpenter, Special Teams Player of the Week, kudos to you.
Yeah, again, it's... I don't think we want to undersell how good a win that really was.
Yeah. And again, folks trying to downplay that win, you know, you listening, you, the listener, you're a hardcore, you know, Gopher football fan. We told you all about how good Fresno State is projected to be, how good they were last year. This is a great win. This was one of the funnest wins that from people I've talked with that won the game that they've been at in quite some time. No, and it's kind of a shame that you looked around the bowl in the fourth quarter. I mean, it was a one-point game or a one-possession game. And folks were leaving. What are you doing? I couldn't wrap my mind around it. You know, folks are leaving, and it's a tie game. I mean, these kids deserve your support. If you show up at 6:30 for the game, might as well stick it out to the end unless it's a blowout or something. But again,
yeah.
I couldn't understand for the life of me. So, again, you, the Golden Gopher football fan, you listening to this one, tell your friends how great of a game it was. Get them out to see a Minnesota likely beat a Miami of Ohio team. Or have, you know, if you have children, have them bring their friends. Have them get interested in Gopher football. It's just, it's a shame to look around in the fourth quarter and see as many empty seats as they were for what an exciting game that it was, especially for the people that attended it for the first 45 minutes. But as you mentioned, Luke, this is a good Fresno State team. This is a Minnesota offense that was all freshmen that persevered on that final drive to get points, to retake the lead, to convert the two-point conversion. And it's a Gopher defense that deserved the win. And then they went up and literally snatched it out of the air and made sure that they got the win. I mean, that was as fun of a game to cover as a media member that there can be. And, again, looking forward to this weekend's game, 2:30, Miami of Ohio, TCF Bank Stadium.
All right, Ryan, I'm going to leave you with one question. I'm not necessarily looking for an answer. I need you to ponder this. leading into the breakdown, because now with Rodney Smith out, you know, what are the expectations for this season? We came into this season saying that it's a bowl or bust, right? They needed to get 6 wins, and maybe not bust, but it'd be severely disappointing, right? Do our expectations need to change? Do they not? I think this will be a lengthy conversation that we'll have in the preview.
I think this would be a great discussion for the bye week.
Yeah.
Again, we'll get 2 more games and then the bye week, so you get one Big Ten game under our belt.
All right.
I'd also be very curious for Derek Burns' thoughts on it, but my initial off the top of the head thoughts would be, I still think 6 wins is a possibility, especially if the defense continues to play as well as they have.
Yeah.
This is a Gopher football team that I think is going to skew to a more pass-happy approach now going forward, because, again, I think that Minnesota is going to struggle kind of establishing the run now that Rodney Smith isn't there to make this offensive line look good, because you're going to have Bryce Williams, you're going to have Mohamed Ibrahim, and then hopefully when Shannon Brooks comes back in November, things are much improved by then. But I think Minnesota's best chance of moving the ball consistently is through the air, because I think Zach Anixon is a more talented quarterback than Minnesota's had in recent years, and you look at the plethora of skill position players that are, yes, young, but they're also talented. The Chris Ottman Bells, the Tyler Johnsons, the Seth Greens, the Rashad Batemans, the Demetrius Douglases, the Philip Howards. I think you can move the ball with those guys. And so I think you're going to see Zach Anixon throwing the ball 30-plus times a game here going forward, because that's what Minnesota's going to need. But initially, I still think Minnesota can get 6, especially when you look around the rest of the Big Ten. Purdue is 0-2. They should be 2-0, in my opinion. But they make 2 boneheaded mistakes in the fourth quarter with a very inexperienced defense, and they lose the game. They lost to flipping Eastern Michigan.
Yeah.
Eastern Michigan is an abysmal MAC team. Like, Rob Reeves, former Gopher coach, is there, and I'm very happy for him that they were able to beat Purdue, but that's embarrassing. We thought Northwestern was good when they beat that Purdue team.
They went and lost to Duke.
And then they go and lose to Duke at home.
Not that Duke's terrible. Let's not be crazy.
No, Duke's a good team. Duke is a good ACC team that'll win 8 games. But then you look at Nebraska. Nebraska lost at home to Colorado, and their star quarterback, the stud freshman, was knocked out of the game with a knee injury. You look at Indiana. They barely beat a Virginia team. Again, there are winnable games on this schedule still. Iowa took care of business against Iowa State. Maryland struggled a little bit with Bowling Green. You're still not going to beat Ohio State. You're still not going to beat Wisconsin. Then Illinois just had their grad transfer quarterback knocked out. So again, there's a lot of different things we have to learn about this Big Ten West. And that if Minnesota takes advantage of Miami of Ohio on Saturday, which they should, I still think they can get to 6, but I'm already eyeing that 2019 season, and I hate doing it because, again, we have to focus on the season at hand.
Right.
But offensively in 2019, I mean, you return everyone. And you look at the talent that Minnesota finally has on offense or appears to have on offense. I mean, getting a 22 and 23-year-old running backs back that have proven that they can be playmakers, along with a skill position core that's another year older, another year in the weight room, another year of agility, plus a defense that's going to have a lot more defensive linemen coming in, including a couple of junior college guys. I mean, you can see and you can look at the schedule to piece together that this should be an 8-win or better team in 2019. But off the top of my head, Luke, that's my snap thought. I still think they can get to 6.
All right. We want to thank everyone for listening again. We appreciate all the people that have rated and reviewed. Again, if you would do that, we'd really appreciate it. It's another way for Gopher fans to find us on the specific aggregator that they use for listening to podcasts. Again, we want to thank our sponsor, the Goal Line Club. Check out their tailgates, maybe the tunnel team. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.